And good morning. It is 16 minutes after 8 a.m. You are tuned to your community radio station, Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka. Well, the Uncommon Music Festival is happening in Sitka tomorrow, running through Saturday. We have three folks in the studio to talk about this. Nate Barnett and Ariadne Lee are co-founders of the festival, and Andy Berry is a participant. Welcome to Morning Edition, folks.
Thank you. Good to be here.
First, let's talk about what the Uncommon Music Festival is. It's a classical music festival, but it's uncommon. What's uncommon about it?
So we really want to show a different side of classical music to audiences here. Almost all of the classical music that a person hears in a concert hall was composed between 1650 and 1900. It's Mozart, Brahms, Beethoven, and we are performing only works from outside that period, before that period, and after it. And we want to show people that classical music can be very accessible, very exciting. We're all very young performers, very enthusiastic about the music that we're singing. Some of it is silly, some of it's very moving, but it's all, yeah, very appealing and performed in spaces that will be very intimate feeling. A lot of the classical music you see is so far away in these huge halls, and we'll be performing in beautiful St. Peter's by the Sea, very intimate space. You can like reach out and touch an opera singer. It's a very, it should be a hopefully, yeah, eye-opening experience for folks who maybe don't think that they like classical music or might not otherwise attend a classical music concert.
Well, Andy Berry, you are an opera singer, one of those folks people can reach out and touch during their performances.
Indeed.
What connected you with this festival?
Oh, man. Well, personally, Nate, one of the co-founders, has been one of my best friends for going on 6 or 7 years now. We've lived together. We've sung a lot together. For me personally, I guess I really believe in live performance and the power of live performance and trying to create new audiences for that in this age when it's so easy to have amazing entertainment in your home, Netflix, that kind of thing. To make a really good argument for what's powerful about live performance is very important to me. And so to do that on my own terms, be on the ground floor of a festival like this, was really important because it seems like a lot of our classical institutions are not succeeding at convincing people that live performance is that worth it.
Well, Nate and Ariadne, you're co-founders of this festival. Nate, you were a Sitka Fellow from Yale last year.
That's right.
And you decided that you wanted to bring a whole bunch of musicians back to town this year. Tell us about both of you, how this got started.
Yeah, well, so I as you said, I was a Sitka Fellow last year. And when I was planning on coming back again this summer, I really wanted to bring more music. When I was here last summer, I composed a piece of music that I actually was lucky to be able to share. Also at St. Peter's by the Sea, I got together some local musicians. I got a string quartet and a vocal quartet together, and we performed a piece that I wrote. And I really wanted to do more of that. So I called up my friend Ariadne Lee. She's a wonderful soprano, and she's a wonderful musician. And I said, hey, want to try to do this thing with me? And she was incredibly enthusiastic about the whole thing. And we started piecing together funding, and we started calling up musicians like Andy. And little by little, we found ourselves with a music festival.
So you brought six musicians up. Most of you are either at university or you've just completed, right?
That's right.
Okay. And Ariadne, tell us about what this festival is going to look like. There's a lot going on.
Yeah. Well, our first event is tomorrow at the Larkspur Cafe. We're really excited. We're going to have some cabaret songs. We're going to have some quartets, some little rounds. There should be a little taste of everything that's coming on Friday and Saturday, but it's going to be in a really relaxed atmosphere, and all the music we're doing is really fun. There's some really funny stuff tomorrow, and I think that's a really important side of the festival, is the silly and funny side. And then on Friday and Saturday, we've got a total of 5 events at St. Peter's by the Sea. So we're going to start with a concert of featuring the singers, me and Andy and Sylvia Leather, mezzo-soprano, and we're going to be singing all kinds of vocal music, some without anything at all, just singing, with piano, with organ, with guitar, with the theorbo, which is a 17th century kind of guitar-like bass instrument.
Taller than me.
and you're tall, so that's saying.
Yeah. And then at 5 p.m., we're going to have our organist and pianist give a recital. He's got some really cool pieces for us, some Fanny Mendelssohn and some 20th century wind composer, and a lot of just really excellent, fun pieces. Then at 2 p.m. on Saturday, we've got a community performance of a piece. Really, anyone is welcome to come to the rehearsal at 1 p.m. It's very easy to play, but it really makes something really special, a really incredible immersive experience for people. So whatever instrument you play, if you sing, if you play toy xylophone, you should definitely come join us. It'll be a lot of fun. Then at 5 p.m. we have Warner Iverson doing plucked strings recital. Also going to be a really fun concert. It's called Music for Scandals. Some of the pieces that he's playing have a really interesting story. And then at 7 p.m. we've got our final concert, which is everyone is involved. We've got the Sitka Sacred Harp singers involved, singing a piece by Nate Barnett. And there'll really be something for everyone on that concert, and there'll be a reception afterwards. So we hope you can join us.
So how has the community reception been to this? It sounds like you've gotten a lot of people involved and excited.
Yeah, I mean, so many people are helping out with this. We've got St. Peter's by the Sea has been incredibly welcoming to us. They're letting us rehearse in their space this week. They're hosting all of our concerts, and Julie Platson, who's the reverend there, has been so helpful the whole way. And we also have lots of homestays throughout the town who are housing a musician. And just in general, I mean, we're sort of getting this feeling. We're walking around and we're seeing people, and they're excited about it, and we're excited to share it. We really are. It's a real treat for us to be in this beautiful place and to be with such kind people, and we hope that they want to come see it.
Yeah, and tomorrow at the Larkspur, we're also getting some Sitkins to perform with us, which is really fun. We've got Rebecca Osborne doing viola. We've got Cami Daniels doing violin, and Muriel Sadler Hart, who's going to sing for us. Mm-hmm. And they're all so talented, and it's really great to like share the venue and share the concert with them.
Ariadne, tell us about why you jumped on board this bandwagon, and tell us a little bit about where you're coming from.
Well, I'm Canadian. I'm from Montreal, and I'm still in school. I've got a year left to finish my bachelor's degree. And when Nate asked me about starting this festival, I think what really sold me on it was the ability to work in a small group with singers who were all really committed. It's kind of hard to find, it's not always easy to find a group of people who really want to do that and are really excited about sharing with in an intimate space with an audience, as Andy was saying. And I think that also for me, a lot of, you perform classical music, and often it's really about like how beautiful it is and just the sort of pure sound of it. And of course, that's wonderful. But I think what a space like this really allows us to do is remind us of the stories that these pieces are telling and talk about where they came from and what the composer's choices that went into them were and what they still mean to us today, why they're still meaningful because of the power and their words. And the stories that they tell.
Barry, why are they meaningful to you? I mean, Andy. Andy Barry.
The music that we're singing, why is it meaningful?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I mean, I think that, as Ariadne is saying, that there's a story in each piece for all of us, and there's something about matching text with music that can create emotions that text alone and music alone can't create. So that combination is really powerful, to be able to hear something that makes you feel a certain way while hearing a musical thing that makes you feel a certain way, but then also hearing words that might make you feel the same way or different, and how do they interact? And there is something very powerful about that and unifying. And for me too, I think a really important part is this community involvement aspect, and especially for the Saturday concert. Truly, when Ariadne says the toy xylophone, I mean, if you play the kazoo, if you just sing in the shower, it is a piece that is very geniusly designed to take amateur musicians of any level or professional musicians and create a very nice, cohesive sounding work. And so I think what is so meaningful for a lot of us about this festival is to feel that we can make classical music, again, feel accessible to more people than just people who wear tuxedos and drink champagne and like wear fur in the opera and the opera house.
Well, this music is meant to be performed, and it's meant to be performed by actual people, your friends and your neighbors. And it strikes me that what you're doing, you're all commenting on the narratives and how meaningful they are. You are creating your own narrative with the city of Sitka during this festival, and that in itself must be meaningful for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about how people can find out more.
So we have a website. It's uncommonmusicfest.org, and you can also find us on Facebook. It's facebook.com uncommonmusicfest. All our information is there, schedule of events, and some tidbits we've put up about the concerts as well. And there's also posters around town, and you might even see a musician that you could tap on and say, hey, can I come to your concert?
Really quickly, again, this first event is tomorrow. Ariadne, when and where?
It's at 8 p.m., 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the Larkspur Cafe. Okay. We hope to see you there.
Great. Well, thank you so much, all of you, for coming down. We've been speaking with Nate Barnett, Ariadne Lee, and Andy Barry about the Uncommon Music Festival, which is happening right here in Sitka tomorrow through Saturday.
Support for KCAW comes from the Fly-In Fish Inn, offering an oceanfront full-service bar and restaurant, serving breakfast Tuesday through Sunday and dinner Tuesday through Saturday, 5 to 9 p.m. at 485 Catlin Street. Reservations and delivery available, 747-7910.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 16th of August, 2016. It's the birthday of Catherine Coburn, born London, 1679. She was the daughter of a sea captain who died of the plague when she was 4. Family struggled to get by. She was precocious, taught herself to read and write at an early age, came out with her first novel at the age of 14, entitled Adventures of a Young Lady, published anonymously, wrote her first play when she was just 16, wrote her first philosophical essay, The Defense of Mr. Locke's Essay of Human Understanding, and John Locke was so impressed that he sent her money. It's the birthday of William Maxwell, the novelist, the editor, born Lincoln, Illinois, 1908, wrote about small-town, middle-American life in the early 20th century, editor at the New Yorker magazine, where he edited John Cheever, J.D. Salinger, Vladimir Nabokov, and John Updike. It's the anniversary of the great geomagnetic storm of 1989, which particularly affected computers across Canada and which shut down the stock market in Toronto when the primary and backup computer systems at the stock exchange failed one right after the other. A geomagnetic storm caused by an increase in solar flares, which in turn produced a CME, a coronal mass ejection, high levels of solar radiation toward the Earth, which affected microchips and caused computer problems across North America. A similar storm the previous March had taken out the Hydro-Quebec power grid. Now that scientists are aware of the effects of geomagnetic storms, they monitor solar activity and keep an eye out for these events, which usually take about a day and a half to reach our atmosphere, a lead time that allows them to take power grids and satellites offline, protect them from permanent damage. It's the birthday of Charles Bukowski, born Andernach, Germany, 1920. His father, an American soldier, his mother was German. They moved to Los Angeles. The boy grew up there, scrawny kid, frequently attacked by bullies. Published his first book of poetry, 1959, entitled Flower, Fist, and Bestial Whale. Charles Bukowski, who said, "Bad luck for the young poet would be a rich father, an early marriage, an early success, or the ability to do anything well." It was on this day, 1896, gold was discovered in the Yukon Territory in Canada, and the Klondike Gold Rush was on. Three miners found the gold in Rabbit Creek near Dawson. Word spread among the locals. People came in to stake claims. But it took a long time for the news to reach Seattle and San Francisco. It took almost a year. But when it did, 100,000 people set off for the Yukon to try to make their fortunes. A few thousand of them struck it rich, and the rest got nothing. Famous photographs of long lines of prospectors and their pack animals trekking over the snowy mountains, all of them heavy laden because Canada required anyone coming in to bring a year's supply of provisions. Here's a poem for today by Charles Bukowski about competition. The higher you climb, the greater the pressure. Those who manage to endure learn that the distance between the top and the bottom is obscenely great, and those who succeed know this secret. There isn't one. A poem by Charles Bukowski about competition, from Sifting Through the Madness for the Word, the Line, the Way, published by Echo and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years, and by Lumosity, with a 10-minute fit test to calculate baseline scores and training programs with 50 challenging brain games. Learn more at lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
During this election season, it is important to do your duty and make your mark. Of course, I am talking about buying your Raven Radio raffle tickets. The prize, 2 round-trip tickets anywhere Alaska Airlines flies. Where would you go if you won? Hawaii or Washington, D.C.? You don't need to decide right now. What you do need to do is buy your tickets. They are available at Raven Radio now. Help keep your community radio station going and maybe get a dream vacation. I urge you to vote for Raven Radio and buy your tickets today.
The 90-Second Naturalist.
Hi there, I'm Thane Maynard. In 2012, a video crew from National Geographic came to the Cincinnati Zoo to get high-definition, slow-motion footage of our cheetahs sprinting. And in addition to getting breathtaking footage, they also documented the fastest-running animal ever recorded. Sahara, our 11-year-old African cheetah, ran a 100-meter course in 5.9 seconds, hitting the top speed of 61 miles an hour. The hilarious thing is that it took the team of professional photographers a week of taping multiple runs until they finally nailed it. That's because the cats outran their cameras on their fancy stainless steel rollers. Also, as you might imagine, cheetahs don't just run at a steady pace, but change their stride frequency as they reach higher speeds. That's a big part of why they are such speedsters. They have to really put on bursts of speed in the final throes of catching an antelope on the African savanna. To study this, scientists have planted force measuring plates in the ground and had the cheetahs chase after a piece of chicken on a string. What they discovered is that cheetahs not only run at a greater speed than any other creature, but their acceleration is unparalleled.
The 90-Second Naturalist is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio and the Cincinnati Zoo, with support from Cincinnati Public Radio members to spread the good news of the natural world.
Good morning. It is 34 minutes after 8 a.m. You're tuned to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it is 54 degrees down here at the Cable House under mostly cloudy skies. And out at the Rocky Gutierrez Airport, winds are coming in from the southeast at 6 miles per hour. For most of our listening area, including Sitka and Port Alexander, expect rain showers today, tapering off a bit through the day with highs around 60. Should be mostly cloudy tonight with lows around 50 and partly sunny tomorrow with highs around 60. Showers are expected to increase in Yakutat today. And for Yakutat, Pelican, and Elfin Cove, your forecast looks a bit different. You should see some cloudy skies tomorrow rather than some sun. Also expect some fog today and tomorrow in Cake, Angoon, Tenneke Springs, Hoona, and Yakutat. And we have small craft advisories due to seas through this morning for Cape Decision to Cape Edgecombe and Cape Fairweather to Icy Cape, and through this afternoon for Cape Edgecombe to Cape Fairweather. Let's take a quick look at the local news stories we heard this morning. Alaskans go to the polls today to determine the party nominees for U.S. Senate and House, as well as for the state legislature. The numbers of Alaskans that have already voted in the primary election suggest there will be a low turnout. In the last presidential election year primary in 2002, about 13,000 Alaskans requested absentee ballots. This year, that number was down by about a third. 4 Republicans and 2 Democrats are running for U.S. Senate, while 4 Republicans, 3 Democrats, and 2 Libertarians are running for U.S. House. In the state legislature, the major parties have 5 contested primaries in the Senate and 17 in the House. For Sitka's races, incumbent Senator Bert Stedman is running unopposed for Senate District R. Republican Sheila Finkenbinder is the only Republican candidate running against incumbent Jonathan Christ Tompkins. And Christ Tompkins is the lone Democrat on the primary ballot. Precinct number one will vote at Grace Harbor Church, and precinct number two will vote at St. Gregory's Catholic Church. The Sitka Electric Department has discovered corrosion in the three new Blue Lake turbines. The department will ascertain what repairs are required, whether there was fault by the manufacturer, and how the warranty may cover that. And over the phone with KCAW, Utility Director Brian Bertacci said the issue was discovered during an inventory of the city's electrical system. And for much of Sitka, the August 18th, 2015 landslide was a wake-up call that even the most settled parts of Alaska remain dynamic and sometimes dangerous places. Local leadership found itself in an unprecedented situation, offering words of comfort to the community while processing the catastrophe themselves. In part two of our five-part series, looking back at the Sitka landslide, we heard from Mayor Mim McConnell about how the community has tried to regain its emotional footing, and from Municipal Administrator Mark Gorman, reflecting on how the landslide last year shaped Sitka. On noon this Thursday, the one-year anniversary of the slide, the city will commemorate the park bench at the cross trail off Kramer Avenue. This will be followed by an unveiling of a portrait of William Storz at 1 p.m. at City Hall. And over the next 3 days, we're going to bring you the voices of others who played significant roles in Sitka's effort to manage and recover from the slide. You can listen to or read most Raven news stories again on our website, kcaw.org. That's also where you can take a look at the community calendar. Sitka High School 9th, 10th grade registration is today, 9 to 11 a.m. and 1 to 3 p.m. The Hope Coalition is meeting at 3:30 p.m. at Sitka Counseling and Prevention Services. There's going to be an outdoor skills workshop for youth 10 and older at Sitka Public Library at 4:30 today. Authors are reading at 6 and 7 at Old Harbor Books, and the Alaska Day Committee is meeting at 6:30. All of that and more is on the community calendar at kcaw.org. Our next tide coming up will be at 12:48. That's going to be an 8.3-foot high tide. And the sun is going to set at 8:38 tonight for 15 hours and 5 minutes of daylight. And tune in right here at 8 p.m. for the Flotsam Hour with oceanographer Curtis Ebbesmeyer and beachcomber Dean Orbison. Learn about beach trash and where it comes from, and call in with your own stories. That's at 8 p.m. on Raven Radio. It's just about 8:39. Thanks so much for joining me this morning. Have a great day, and I'll be here bright and early with you tomorrow.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. Good morning. I'm David Green.
And I'm Renee Montaigne. In a Tennessee courtroom today, a high-stakes bail hearing will take place. It's a case involving China and alleged nuclear espionage. Alan Ho has been jailed since April. He's charged with violating the Atomic Energy Act. His case is one of a number involving scientists who the U.S. government suspects may also be spies. The scientists in question are all U.S. citizens, though they were all born in mainland China or Taiwan. NPR's Mary Louise Kelly is with us here now. Good morning.
Good morning, Renee.
And what exactly is Alan Ho charged with?
So Ho is a nuclear engineer and consultant. And the charges against him, in essence, are that he helped China's biggest nuclear power company to develop sensitive nuclear technology. He's also charged with conspiracy to act as an agent of a foreign government, in this case, China. And the allegation is that in doing these things, he put